The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by MECU, Baltimore's credit union, and the Maryland Department of Housing and Community Development. Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome. You know, the United States is one of the most powerful and richest nations on the planet Earth. And we spend more money on healthcare than any other nation on the planet Earth. In 2006, Americans, we spent $2.1 trillion. Say it again, $2.1 trillion on healthcare, which is about more than $7,000 a person. That's more than any other place on the planet. And yet, by many measures, infant mortality, life expectancy, early detection of many life-threatening diseases, we're near the bottom of the pack. So how could that be? And how could it also be that so many people in America are uninsured, don't have health care? That's millions of people have no access to decent health care. If you're poor, poor working class, if you have certain disorders, you have no access to health care. Dental care. We saw the stories about a young boy who died from lack of health care here in the state of Maryland for dental care. And those are very real issues. And a recent poll showed that close to 60% of all Americans think that America should have a national health care system, a government-funded national health care system, similar to what they have in Europe. Every other industrialized nation on the planet has one. We don't. The question is, why don't we? And I'll read you an interesting quote. And we're going to explore some of this hour. We're going to explore health care from the perspective of two physicians and another guest who are all part of the Maryland chapter of Physicians for National Healthcare Program. And they all have a similar perspective. We're doing that today to lay that perspective on the table because it never gets an airing. And later in the month and over the next couple of months, we'll have major debates on this program over the future of healthcare and how it should be organized. But I wanted people to have a chance to hear this. We always hear the other side. We never hear this side. And if President Obama could say in 2003, when he was still senator, "I happen to be a proponent of a single-payer healthcare program," he said, "all of us know we may not get there immediately because first we have to take back the White House, we have to take back the Senate, we have to take back the House." Well, the Democrats have done that. And during a debate in Florida, a mayoral debate, and it's a mayor's association debate, he said, "If you're starting from scratch, then a single-payer healthcare system would probably make sense. But we've got all these legacy systems in place. And managing the transition, as well as adjusting the culture to a different system, would be difficult to pull off." So one of the questions we want to talk about today is, what is single-payer healthcare? How does it work in Europe? And why are politicians so terrified of it? Why is it the bogeyman? Why is it something that nobody wants to talk about? We'll talk about that and a great deal more. Joining us in studio, Dr. Taro Adachi, who is an OBGYN in private practice, and all our guests, as I said, are members of the Maryland Chapter of Physicians for National Healthcare Program. A little disclaimer here at the top of the hour. Taro Adachi is also a member of the Board of Directors of the Center for Emerging Media that produces this show. There's no connection. We've been talking to Taro about single payer way before he became involved in the center, but he's one of the people who's a spokesman for that. That's why he's on the program today. Dr. Margaret Flowers is with us, who's a pediatrician, and she's also a member of the same organization, Brigitte Marti, as well. And Brigitte and Margaret and Taro, welcome. Good to have all three of you with us.
Thank you.
Nice to be here.
And the lines are open, 410-319-8888. 410-319-8888. Tell us what you think of your health care. Tell us what you think of our healthcare system. Tell us what you'd like to see America do. Or write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. 410-319-8888. Let's just talk, before we get into this, some of the quotes I read and what's happening. Let's talk about what single payer is. Let me do it in this sense. President Obama and most of our elected officials who are for universal health care, including former President Bush, talk about universal health care. And there's even a split in Maryland between people who are involved in healthcare reform, who are for universal healthcare, kind of piecemeal getting us there in terms of coverage, and those who talk about single payer. Let's talk about what the difference is between universal and single payer. Who'd I like to go is fine. Margaret Flowers, why don't you start off?
Sure.
And welcome.
Thank you. And thank you so much for inviting us today. We're so glad that this debate is starting to happen. So in terms of universal health care and single payer, and there's been some confusion. Oftentimes when people are saying universal health care, the public thinks they're saying single payer. The universal health care people believe... Maybe I should have some help with this because it was very clear before I started.
That's all right, take your time.
But so people who talk about universal health care are talking about providing health insurance for everybody. And what it's important to realize is that having health insurance in this country doesn't protect you, as we see with, you know, 50% of foreclosures are due to medical debt, 50% of bankruptcies are due to medical debt, and 76% of those people had health insurance beforehand. But I guess what I wanted to say is that health insurance is really just a way of financing health care. Mm-hmm. And single payer is another way of financing health care. And health insurance, we could talk about how it came around, you know, historically, but it does it in a very inefficient way. There's a lot of administrative waste, a lot of cost due to administrative costs. And so single payer is just a way of taking all the health care dollars and putting them into one fund and then paying for health care out of that instead of using a middleman, which is the health insurance, which generates a lot of paperwork and a lot of extra costs.
And the middleman then is the bogeyman, Taro.
Right.
In some ways.
Absolutely. I mean, and Margaret's referring to people with insurance. The Commonwealth Fund that does research in health areas reported that over the last 6 years or so, the number of Americans who became underinsured went up by 60% to 25 million people. That means that people who are paying more than 10% of their income out of pocket in spite of having health insurance. And the scary part about that is if you add that to the 45 million people with no insurance, they all act the same in terms of health care. People miss appointments to my office because although they have health insurance, maybe they can't meet their deductible, they can't meet their co-pays. So, you know, just having an insurance card doesn't guarantee health. And I think the distinction with single payer, besides the funding of it, a pool of national money to cover everyone, is that everyone has not only an insurance card, but has free access to care. All the providers that are currently practicing, you know, everyone takes suddenly the same insurance. So you can go wherever you want to. You can show up at any hospital you need to, and your care is guaranteed. And there are no co-pays. There's no deductibles, medications included. So it's really a much broader scope when it comes to actually providing care to individuals.
Brigitte, you look about to say something. Please do.
Yeah. I just want to say something about universal health care. And universal health care is more than paying for. It means that everybody has the same goes through the same standard of care. Everybody has the same care, absolutely everybody. This is what is unique and versus in all directions. This is universal. And it means that people don't have to suffer from any financial consequences if they are sick. And it's the same thing for everyone. And that's actually the principle of universal healthcare in Europe, which means that it's a social service. It's open to everyone, regardless of your financial status, and for many countries, regardless of your immigration status, which is also another thing. And it links that to the idea that healthcare is a real human right.
I mean, but politicians will argue, and when we have a show later with the congressional representatives on this issue, and hope that one of you will join that conversation when we have our congressional representatives here so they can kind of respond to this thing directly. I mean, the argument here in America is that we are a market-driven nation and that part of the market is healthcare and insurance. And if you can guarantee that every citizen in the United States of America has healthcare insurance, privately funded, private-public partnership, whatever that is, then it will work. And so why do we need which is a bogeyman in America, why do you need a government-run healthcare system?
Right. And
Margaret.
What's interesting is that back in the 1960s, there was a very strong belief in the market system when it came to healthcare. An article saying that if we just free up the health insurance market, they'll cover everybody in 10 years. And you can see that hasn't happened since we opened it up in the 1980s to private investors, so that now we have investor-owned insurance companies. Our health outcomes have actually declined, and the number of people who don't have insurance has increased. The number of people that we consider underinsured, which means that you may have health insurance, but when you actually get sick, you find out that it doesn't cover what you need in order to get well again. So when it comes to healthcare, the market is a failure. And part of that, Robert Kuttner writes about in his latest book, Obama's Challenge. He says that that's because market depends on scarcity, but there's actually an unlimited demand for wanting to live. So it doesn't quite work that way.
That is true. So the question then still remains, and I want to ask our listeners to join us at 410-319-8888. What kind of health insurance do you have? Should there be universal health care in America, let's say based on the Medicare system, that is just a pass-through, and that it guarantees health care? How does that change the nature of our society? What would you like to see? Do you have health care insurance now? 410-319-8888. Doctors Tara Adashi and Margaret Flowers are with us, and Brigitte Marti, who are members of the Maryland Chapter of Physicians for a National Health Care Program. 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. So the question is, again, I mean, I really want to get to the heart of the difference, and that healthcare costs, I mean, there are 500,000 people who are involved in the health insurance industry, who are employed by the healthcare. That's a lot of people. And you have universal healthcare, the first thing people are going to say is, you're driving these 500,000 people out of business and out of their jobs. And can America afford to have another 500,000 people without work?
Well, I'll take a shot at that.
Taro Adachi.
The economy is obviously suffering now greatly, and whatever the independent industries are, we're seeing layoffs across the board. And I think part of the problem with each business sector is that they're suffering because of the cost of health care as a benefit. So as an employer, I mean, I'm a small employer. I dropped health care a while back because they outpriced me.
You're a physician and you dropped health care?
As a physician, for my employees and myself, I had to drop health care as a benefit. I just couldn't afford it. We've seen statistically significant rises in premiums as employers, you know, for the last decade and a half. Imagine GM or any other company. They can't afford to keep paying for the benefits. So the market system is actually suffering because of the impact of the healthcare market on every other employer we have. As a market system, the health industry is actually quite different because in order to make more money as a private company, they actually have to deliver less services. And that's what they call it, a market failure. The health industry almost is destined to fail because their success depends on providing less of the product. So I think the impact of that is very significant. If we then look at a system, trying to provide health care to individuals, the main difference between single payer and universal health care is actually coming back to the provision of the service itself. As you said, unlimited interest in staying alive, but in seeking care. And in other countries, we've seen the pattern that when health care became available, like in England, people went out and were interested in getting those services. So We need to provide a better funding system that we can sustain so that we can continue to offer the care, provide the product back to the people.
But if I could speak to the jobs.
And then I'll open the phones, get people in the air. Please go ahead, Margaret.
There was actually a study that was just put out last month, and it actually showed that if we created a national health program, that it would create 2.6 million jobs. And the national health program bill states that those people who are currently employed by the health insurance industries would be the first ones to be hired under the new system, and the ones who aren't hired would have actually their salary up to $100,000 per year guaranteed. I think it's for a two-year period, and retraining. So there are provisions to take care of those people. And those people are put there, and for most part, to be obstacles and deny care, and I think they'd be happier maybe doing something else.
Should we go to a single-payer healthcare system? We're talking to single-payer advocates this hour because we want to hear their perspective undiluted. And we will later on in the course of this program over the coming months have debates on the future of healthcare in America. But we never hear this perspective. It's time to hear it in a major media market here and have people think about this. We're joined by Dr. Taro Adachi, Dr. Margaret Flowers, and Brigitte Marti, all members of the Maryland Chapter of Physicians for a National Healthcare Program. 410-319-8888 is the number here. You can write to us at Steiner Show, STEINER, show at gmail.com. And JB in Baltimore, you're on the air.
Recently moved from after living in Western Europe for a little while,
mm-hmm.
and where I had all the health care benefits that a Western European would have. And now that I'm working for the American branch of a European company, I found myself with a benefit package in my hands that was nothing but an HMO. And my options are very limited due to my salary, and I'm contemplating moving back.
Just for health care?
Not just that, but it would definitely take a chunk out of my salary to find something else than just an HMO, which might not cover for, you know, the motorcycling that I do, in case I have, you know, a bad accident due to Baltimore drivers.
Well, you mentioned two things here, and I want to explore them both. When you talked first about an HMO, I mean, that system, the Health Maintenance Organization system, I remember debating this 15 years ago on the air when it first really became a major issue in America of how to deliver health care, to save costs and direct people into certain places. Let's talk about I know from your perspective, all the drawbacks of an HMO system, how that compares to a single-payer system. Margaret, go ahead.
Well, I worked for an HMO. Actually, when I was living in California, I worked for Kaiser Permanente, and at that time it was a nonprofit. I don't know if it still is, but and it actually functioned pretty well because it was a system that paid the doctors a salary. It was very well organized. Everybody had their card. They knew where to get their care. But the problem is that when we started entering into the privatization of HMOs, then if you're an investor-owned HMO, your responsibility is to make a profit for your investors, and often, well, most of the time, profits are more important than delivering health care, and so we see cutbacks in the lower quality of
and pushing
care.
Patients through, so you see more patients per hour,
right,
to maximize the profit.
Why I left practice. I didn't want to do that.
And so the other part of this, it seems to me, is that the people don't realize when you talk about a single payer, one of the things that JB was saying is that we all pay for our health care. I mean, I have health care, my employees have health care. And we try to pay for the employees part of the health care, but they have to pay for their family participation in the health care plan because we can't afford to pay it. We'd like to. We can't afford it. So, but in single payer, it doesn't come out of your paycheck. It's part of our U.S. tax structure. Right? And that's something people don't quite understand, I think.
That's right. I think it's about 3.75% personal tax increase. So where we're paying into Medicare a certain amount now, we'd pay a fixed amount, and employers would do the same. So instead of paying, for example, employers paying rising premiums, they'd pay a fixed amount per employee. And so suddenly portability related to employment is not an issue because you're covered wherever you are. Everyone is just contributing on an individual employer basis.
But people argue that portability can exist with private health care insurance.
Well, it hasn't.
No.
In reality.
Because if you have a health condition and you leave a job and then you need to pick up a new insurance, it's possible that you're going to be denied being able to get the new insurance or that it may come at a higher premium. So there isn't really portability at this point.
Hear what our listeners have to think, and I want to remind you all again, we're talking about single-payer healthcare system this hour from the perspective of people who support that idea because it's never heard undiluted. We want to have that conversation with all of you. 60% of Americans are saying that's the system they want, yet all of our politicians are terrified of it, run from it, including the president who we've all just elected and who people seem to support. And why is that? Is it the power of the healthcare industry? Is it the power of the insurance industry, which we'll talk about in a bit? And is that what you really want? 410-319-8888. And what's your perception of it? JB, thanks for that call. Let's go to Steve in Baltimore. You're on the air.
Hey, good evening, panel.
Hi, Steve.
Hi.
Hey, how you doing?
Hi.
Well.
She just spoke on something I have firsthand experience with. I have kidney disease. I am on a list for a transplant. I just left my job due to downsizing about a year ago. I just became reemployed in January through a temp agency. I'm not eligible for benefits yet, but it's a temp to perm position. I have been made aware that when I do become permanent, that the health care, I may be excluded or, again, have to pay a higher premium because of the pre-existing condition. That's my first point. So I understand perfectly what she's saying. She's absolutely right. The second point is, if you have a medical system that's built for private investors or with private investors, their main primary goal is profit and not taking care of patients.
Exactly.
That's going to be the difference between making sure people are taken care of versus making a profit. Who do they answer to?
Those are really two very important points, I think. So the whole question of pre-existing conditions is a huge one for people. Huge.
Yeah.
I want to grab that one.
The health insurance industry made an interesting proposal recently, but in the last 30 days, that they would cover everybody, including pre-existing conditions, in exchange for creating a federal mandate that everyone has to be insured. It almost sounds like an act of desperation on their part, realizing that their ship is starting to sink. But they recognize that while they can offer that and say we're just going to take everybody, the mandates are going to put people in situations where, frankly, as in individual states, they just haven't worked, because if people can't afford health insurance, they can't afford even if they're forced to do that. And the mandates in states like Massachusetts and other states across the country have done it, so they haven't worked. So the insurance industry doesn't seem to be able to deal with, you know, the higher cost of pre-existing conditions. I'll make another comment. If you look at some of the benefits that worked with HMOs in their initial concept, it was about trying to save money by actually providing preventative services, so that you could actually save money by not getting to the existing condition to begin with. And I think that's one of the strengths that needs to be emphasized in a single-payer system, is that it is a system not only of funding but of quality assurance. And across the board, there are then guidelines and quality benchmarks that ultimately should help to prevent some of the health issues that end up costing more down the line.
I'm going to add to that, Brigitte, go ahead, then we'll open the phones again.
Yeah, I wanted to comment on JB's comment coming from Western Europe, because I know a little bit about what's going on over there and pre-existing condition. It's really something that we don't have in Western Europe. There's no pre-existing condition. Everybody is in the same system. There's no need for this different ways of looking at the health of people, whether they had that before, whether they are going to have that tomorrow, or whatever disease. It's not part of the discussion. And by putting every resource together, they have a possibility to pay for everything. And the numbers show that they pay actually half the price of what American people pay to get a way better healthcare outcome. And that's also, in time of crisis, is very important, because, you know, people need to have some protection somewhere, and this is considered public service.
I mean, I think one of the things that we hear about the healthcare system, I remember as a kid growing up, my dad was a physician. He went from thinking that this was socialized medicine and hating it to, at the end of his career, saying we need a single-payer system. He had this long transition I watched my father go through for 40 years, where he changed his view. And part of it was because he believed in individual private practice, that people should be able to have their own practice, not a giant group practice. People have, in the old-fashioned way, unquote. The interesting thing is, a single-payer system, from what I've been reading and thinking about, would actually allow private physicians in their own practice to flourish, as opposed to being forced into group practices or working for hospitals or large corporations. That's the kind of thing people don't ever hear about or think about.
Yeah, that's an excellent point, because under a single-payer system, since, like Taro said, every single healthcare provider is included in that system, the public has a free choice of who they want to go to. So if you talk about competition, now you actually have competition between physicians over patients, as opposed to private investors over who's going to make the most money. But it allows physicians to practice medicine again, which it's very hard to do right now, because you do have a pressure to see a lot of patients in a short period of time, and then you do have the insurance companies to deal with. Physicians spend about 20% of their overhead dealing with all the different health insurance companies. And then if you decide on a course of treatment, you may have to go to an insurance administrator to get approval for the treatment. So in a single-payer system, physicians and patients are the ones who are making medical decisions again without the interference from the health insurance industry.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
And I just wanted to quickly say that we do have an increasing problem with a physician shortage, and part of the reason is the frustration, because we don't have a healthcare system right now. We have a fragmented situation that's not working.
And physicians are moving more and more towards the upper ends of their profession in terms of making money, as opposed to preventative medicine, because of the way we pay our physicians and how healthcare is being divvied out. You want to say something, Brigitte, and we'll go back to the phones.
Yeah, I just wanted to add to what Margaret is saying, and again, comparing with Europe. And that's actually the system that makes it work for everybody, and also brings the quality up, because they can have regular standards for everything. Nosocomial infections are going down, and they are going up here because everybody works in a fragmented system that nobody talks to anybody. I mean, it's just it's complicated to get information across the medical system here, and that's what they have tried to do in Europe. And the interesting thing is, in next year or the year after, probably all European citizens would have the same card to access any medical system
wherever they are in Europe.
Wherever they are in Europe.
We're talking about the notion of a single-payer healthcare system in this country, why it came so close to being in 1948 and under President Roosevelt in the 1930s, why it didn't come into being, and why is it being left out of the political debate by most people in the U.S. Congress, even those who said they supported it earlier, like President Barack Obama. What are your thoughts? 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. And as I said, we're having this conversation now to lay this out for everybody. We will then enter into debate over the next several months about health care reform, with single payer being part of that debate with other sectors of our economy and health care industry. 410-319-8888. Vanessa in Baltimore, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
I'm actually
a third-year medicine resident and just had a few questions about how the single-payer health care might affect physician remuneration at the end of the day. And if we're going to be paid less, how will that affect the funding of medical education? Because then people won't be able to take on thousands of dollars worth of debt to fund their medical education.
That's a really, I think, excellent question. And either one of our doctors want to answer this question?
Happy to tackle that. There's actually two parts to the question. The first is remuneration. And when we've been out in the community talking to physicians about single-payer health, what I hear a lot is if all my patients were, I was getting paid based on a Medicare rate, I wouldn't be able to survive. And I think that when you look at remuneration, I mean, people, I think, have the misconception that physicians can just charge and push the cost up. But physicians really have no control of what they're paid for a service. They may have a fee, but the insurance company decides how much they're going to pay for it. Right now, almost all insurance companies, private ones, base their rates on what Medicare sets. So in a way, we're already sort of basing our whole system on what Medicare rates are anyway. In the future, the reimbursements sort of open everyone up to collective bargaining. We have a chance then as a national specialty, you know, specialty by specialty, to say, here's a service, what's a fair rate, and it's more likely to be equitable compared to, you know, what we get paid for the same service here in Baltimore versus Minnesota and other places. Right now, there's a huge disparity. I think that for physicians also, in terms of their sort of income and expense, they have to take into account that they're not going to be paying the ever-increasing cost of things, benefits to their employees. They're not going to be paying for some of the staff they have that take care of a lot of the paperwork. So they have to look at the sort of the whole economic package in a single-payer funded system. The other question about education is very important, but really a distinct question. I think there the government's going to have to step forward for the transition physicians who have already paid in the high cost of education and now are stuck with a system that's in transition in terms of reimbursement. There's going to have to be some either debt forgiveness. Certainly for younger physicians, there are already many programs in place where they can go and serve in underserved areas in exchange for debt forgiveness. And I think as 75-plus Americans get insured, we're going to need more care in certain areas. So there may be some incentives to go and serve in those areas where there are less physicians now while the system continues to upgrade. And then moving forward, there's got to be some kind of funding for education, not just for physicians, but for nursing staff and PAs and everyone else that is involved in providing hands-on health care to individuals.
Vanessa, did you want to say something else before we went to... She's there, but
yes, I'm just very in support of single-payer health care. I do have colleagues who are primary care physicians and are considering concierge or boutique medicine in order to get a practice that's more focused and gets the benefit of primary care, but also enough money to make a living.
You raised a really important point here about boutique medicine. And then we're going to take a break in a couple of minutes before we get there. And Jim and Maria, Carrie, we're going to come to your calls as well. At 410-319-8888. But the whole idea of boutique medicine, where you have a base of clients that pay you X amount of dollars a year to be seen. And what we've done in America, it seems what we're heading towards is a tiered healthcare system where if you have money, you're taken care of. And if you're poor or working class, middle class, and don't have a lot of excess capital, you're not as well taken care of. And that seems to be... Now, how does a single payer address that?
We're already there in terms of being tiered. Well, the interesting thing about boutique medicine is Bridget and I were just talking this morning, and in France, they've determined that they need to have about 151 primary care providers per 100,000 population. And if you look at physicians here in terms of their patient loads, and when they go into boutique practices, they try to limit themselves to around 600 patients, which is about what that would work out to be in Europe. They already realize that that's about the appropriate load for a physician. But here, there's no control, and you just... end up, because we don't have enough primary care physicians, you end up seeing so many patients and having less time. But part of having a system is recognizing where you have areas of need. And our primary care providers are the backbone of our system. They're the ones who provide the ongoing preventive care that they're going to save the system money. And so you recognize in a system that those are the people that you're going to need to support and do in tuition reimbursement or incentives or whatever you need to do. But that's the backbone of a system.
We're taking a very short break. We're talking about healthcare systems in America, why some people are arguing for a single-payer health care, why 60% of Americans want a single-payer health care system, why our politicians are terrified of it, the role of the healthcare industry, the cost of medicine, and how we universalize health care in America, not just health insurance. We'll talk about that when we return, and you can all join us in that conversation. Reminding you as we go to break, the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union. Offering a full range of financial services, MeQ was formed in 1936 to help people during the Great Depression. And over 70 years later, they're still there to help people during difficult times. For more information, go to MECU.com. We'll be right back. I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome back. And before we join our discussion, I'll remind you the Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the Maryland State Mortgage Late Don't Wait program. For more information and personal counseling, the number is 1-877-462-7555. And we're talking about single-payer health this hour with two physicians, three people on our show today, two of whom are physicians, all members of the Maryland Chapter of Physicians for National Healthcare Program. We're talking about single-payer alone today because that is something that gets very little attention by the media. And even though it is supported by an overwhelming majority of Americans, in every industrialized country on the planet, there's a single-payer healthcare system. Why don't we have one here? They're answering those questions. And over the next few months, we will have a lot of debates between different visions of healthcare. But we want to have you have a chance to hear what single payer really means, kind of undiluted for an hour. We're joined by Dr. Taro Adachi, who is an OBGYN, Dr. Margaret Flowers, who's a pediatrician, Bishop Marti. They're all members of the Maryland Chapter of Physicians for National Healthcare Program. And for those of you just tuning in, I want to say again a disclaimer, Dr. Taro Adachi is a member of the board of directors of the Center for Emerging Media that produces this show. Has nothing to do with why he's on the air with us today. This is a conversation that took place way before he joined our board, and he's one of the activists for single payer, which is why he's here. Be clear about that. 410-319-8888. Transparency is all important. Or write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. Let me go to the phones and come back and then address the issues we were talking about just before we went to break. 410-319-8888. And Jim in Baltimore, you're on the air.
Hi, I'm glad for the opportunity to talk to all four of you delightful people.
Welcome.
One of the things we hear, and you sort of touched on it before, the boutique medicine, one of the things we hear about single payer all the time, and there, of course, there are lots of things we hear, is that single payer countries have long waits. But here it takes me, for example, 2 or 3 months for a routine appointment. And you can spend a day in the ER unless you just fall out on the floor bleeding all over the place. Are there some good websites where I can get more information on single payer for this country?
Definitely. Thank you, Jim.
Margaret Flowers.
For that. And that issue of long waits, as many of us realize, and maybe the public doesn't, is that that's somewhat of a myth that's been the misinformation that's out there about single payer. And that it, actually in the countries that have single-payer systems, there is not a problem with long waits. But the websites where you can get more information, you can go to www.p.org. PNHP.org. That's the national website for Physicians for National Health Program. You can, through that, access the state chapters as well. Or another excellent website is healthcare-now.org.
And we'll have all those on our website, by the way. You can go up to our website, steinershow.com or .org, and we'll have all that information there for you. Brigitte?
Yeah, I wanted to say something about the time you wait before you have access to care. And in Europe, many countries have absolutely no waiting time. and for good reasons, because a national health program relies on primary care, and people have access to primary care physicians for all those little things that people here don't see. I mean, cannot address with a primary care physician because it's so difficult to get in touch with someone in the middle of the night, and they have actually emergency calls for primary care physicians, and they take care of their patients. And they don't go to emergency room. So the people who go to the emergency room are the people who really need the emergency room, and not for all those little things.
Taro, go ahead.
The wait time that the caller brought up in this country is actually significant. It relates to sort of how we as a culture look at healthcare. I think many people who've looked at single payers say, why should I be paying for the healthcare of all these other people? And I think if we look at emergency room wait times in Atlanta over a 10-year period, because of the cost and the lack of the monies earned by uninsured people, the wait times for a complaint like chest pain went up by 150%. So that means me showing up in trying to get to an emergency room with the best insurance in the world, I'm going to wait 150% longer to get seen for my chest pain, and it affects outcomes without question. So it's really a question of paying for really our own health care, not paying for the health care of those who don't have it right now. It's about establishing the quality again.
Now, one of the things that I've read, and Brigitte, we talked about this when we first met a few weeks ago, is that the European systems in each nation, from what I've been reading, are very different from one another. They're not the same system. There's a mix and match of private and public. And so what are we talking about when we talk about industrialized societies have single-payer health, if all those societies really have a different way of looking at it?
European nations have a national health program, all of them. They have, except Switzerland, which is a little bit different.
Except what?
Switzerland, which is a little bit different. But they have a public system first, and then you can purchase supplemental insurance, and that's your own choice. But they have a public system. And most of the countries function with a fee-for-service system, except Britain. Most of the countries have a fee-for-service. It's basically publicly funded and privately delivered. And, for instance, in Denmark, all the general practitioners are actually paid by the government. In Sweden, I learned that recently, that the king used to pay all the physicians since 1817. So it's a long way of, you know. Then they changed to a service with fee-for-service and keeping the people with a salary at the public hospitals. But most of the people have fee-for-service. Finland, the same way. We always talk about the Scandinavian countries as, you know, the very socially organized countries. They still have fee-for-service for most of their care. But in France, it's also a fee-for-service. They have some differences, but they all respond to the same thing, that the public service, the government, because they really have a strong sense that the government represents the public, is responsible for making sure that the healthcare system is good and the people are taken care of. And very recently, the European government, the European Commission, Environmental Commission, passed a bill that was to remove all the toxics from consumption. And they decided to do that because, on one hand, they realized that because the government was responsible for the health, the good health of the population, they were going to save some money. And they realized they were going to save about 10 billion euros in a few decades. So it's the difference. It's only difference. It's the delivery, but the every European system has a national health program.
We're talking about single-payer health care this hour on the Mark Steiner Show. You can join us here at 410-319-8888. United States of America is the only country industrialized country on the planet that does not have a single-payer health care system that guarantees health care in an easy, systematic way for every citizen of our country. How does it affect our health care? We're going to explore that. What would be the difference in a single payer in terms of health care, and what do that for the economy? How do you feel about your health care? How do you feel about single payer health care? Should that be part of the debate? Why do you think it's not part of the debate? 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. And Maria in Baltimore, you're on the air.
Good evening. Thanks for taking my call. I am a single-payer advocate, and a very fervent one, actually. And I do believe that Americans need to thinking of health care as a commodity that is given or denied, depending strictly on your ability to pay for it. It's really the larger question is a moral one, and you know we could go on about that. But I also wanted to say when I talk to people about single payer, and I get that I won't be able to pick my doctor or it's socialized medicine. When you frame it in single payer eliminates the insurance companies, that really gets their attention because most people I think grasp the fact that it's the insurance companies that are making our healthcare decisions and that are really preventing our doctors from practicing. And I want to say, too, that my former primary care physician went to a boutique practice, and because of the cost, only my husband goes to him now. I had to find another physician, and this is a wonderful doctor whose practice was comprised primarily of over 3,000 Medicaid, Medicare, and then private insurance patients. And he told us that he hated going to this and didn't want to do it, but he said, I can't practice medicine. I have 3,000 patients. All I do is spend into the wee hours of the morning doing what I have to do to satisfy the insurance company. So with great reluctance, he went to this, and it's a real loss, and it's not just for me, but for most of his patients who couldn't afford it. But we understood why he did it. And again, when you have insurance companies determining what the rates are and strictly basing everything on money, I mean, they must be eliminated from the healthcare equation. And why isn't that happening? It's because of the pharmaceutical and insurance lobbies. It's that simple. So those are my comments.
Thank you so much. I think that let's talk a bit about that. I mean, the one survey I read about said that that one third of every dollar we spend, $350 billion a year, is spent because the paper processing and that goes with insurance companies, and that's where the money is going.
Exactly. Yeah, and it's so much waste. I mean, even here in Maryland, we learned that the state of Maryland spends about $14 million a year just processing paperwork for people who go in and out of our prison system. When they come out, they get enrolled into, Medicaid. They have to disenroll them when they go into the prison system because the prison system has a different medical system. And then when they leave the prison system, they have to get out of that system and get enrolled into another system at the cost of $14 million a year just for paperwork.
And also, if you look at the overhead costs of the private health insurance versus systems like Medicare or the VA, they're working at almost 10 times the operating expense. And as we're looking at the bigger economy again, some of the same problems with the top-heavy expense. The CEOs of these health insurance companies are making millions of dollars, and with stock options and some of the same issues we've seen with the financial groups and the big car makers, the very top-heavy expenses.
Well, if the system is as simple as you all make it sound, single-payer healthcare system, and we'll talk about in a minute your ideas about how it will could make healthcare delivery much easier and more universal for the citizens of this country, then why is it so difficult for it to get any traction in the political debate in America? I mean, it's just outside the debate.
Right. Well, initially,
I just want to say something about also, the political aspect is linked to the fact that the political campaigns are financed privately, and that's another big difference with the European, and they don't have it's a public funding for political campaign, and that's that's part of the reason.
Another part of the reason is the American health insurance plans lobbyists, who I think number around 38,000, and that's who's going into Washington and talking to our members of Congress. And now we're going into Washington and talking to our members of Congress to try to get them to pass single payer.
You were saying, Margaret, during the break that there are, I was kind of alluding to the fact that no politicians in America, very few politicians, will back single payer health care, and that they're not getting any traction. But you're saying that there are a growing number of political elected leaders are coming out for single payer.
Right. And as you read earlier, Obama himself has supported single payer. But I think in terms for Obama to go in that direction, just like Roosevelt needed, he didn't start out being a very progressive president, but he had to be pushed into being a progressive president. You know, Roosevelt said, I think, to one of the union guys, you need to make me do it, right? Obama needs us to make him do it to overcome these obstacles. But there are, I mean, John Conyers is a longtime single-payer champion from Detroit who has a bill, H.R. 676, and there is a coalition of organizations, the Leadership Conference for Guaranteed Healthcare, which is comprised of over 30 different organizations and growing, representing over 20 million people nationwide, trying to build that grassroots movement. And you can learn more about that through the Healthcare Now website. But in the state of Maryland, we have some great champions as well. Donna Edwards has been a supporter of H.R. 676. Elijah Cummings has been a supporter. And we hope our other members of Congress, and hopefully some of them are listening, will also become supporters of H.R. 676, because it is what the people want, and the physicians as well. We have a national poll of physicians, which showed, it was done in fall of 2007, 59% of physicians nationwide would like a national health program, and that was an increase of 10% in a five-year period. And that's what we see in the community as well, is that more and more physicians are becoming frustrated with this situation, and they want to see this happen.
410-319-8888. We're talking about single-payer system to cover health insurance and health care in the United States of America. Dr. Tara Adachi, Dr. Margaret Flowers, and Brigitte Marti are all members of the Maryland Chapter of Physicians for National Healthcare Reform. 410-319-8888 is the number here to join this conversation. Your thoughts about health care, what elected officials should do, why we're in the mess we're in when it comes to health care. And Dolores in Baltimore, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hi, Dolores. You're on the air.
Okay. Can you hear me?
Yes, welcome.
Okay. I just wanted to say that I first read about similar health systems in a book called The United States of Europe. And the title caught my attention, and I found the book very fascinating. And for the most part, I find that not only with health care, but there are other systems too, whereby Americans need to learn that there are other perspectives on delivering health care and education. And our systems are not necessarily better than everybody else. And I think it would do us well to investigate some other things and not be frightened by politicians by thinking socialism is a bad word or whatever. You know, I don't care what they call it, but we just need to know that there are other ways of doing things. You know, and I just wanted to drop that comment before leaving. I'm on my way to, I'm going into the hairdresser.
Okay, well, thank you so much for joining us, Dolores. I appreciate you holding on to being part of the show.
Thank you.
And to talk about what Dolores was saying here, I mean, one of the things we don't talk about a lot is where the costs are in our healthcare system, why it's costing us so much money. I read a story about the let's just say, in terms of testing for prostate cancer. In Europe, they don't do the same tests we do, but we spend close to $500 billion, $500 billion a year, or $300 billion a year in profit for people testing for prostate, treating it, the medication, and how it's fueled by the need to make a profit in medicine from the insurance end and the pharmaceutical end is really what's propping up the system. People would argue that would, and a single payer healthcare system would put a dent in that, which is why perhaps there's so much opposition from U.S. industry.
Well, certainly, if we look away from the healthcare insurance companies, the pharmaceutical companies, you know, sell the same drugs in multiple countries, the same manufacturers. Those drugs go for a lot more in this country than in other countries, and you have to wonder also if they're putting a lot of money in and expecting profit. Are they also influencing, you know, testing, and you know, are they in bed with either physicians or health insurance companies to kind of draw things to their drugs? Yeah, there isn't really, if you take out the financial incentive, do we need another statin, which would be a cholesterol-lowering drug, as opposed to finding one that's inexpensive, that works very well, that already has proven studies to lower heart disease? Do they need to do the R&D to find the next one so they can market it and sell it? So there's a pattern there.
And there's a one thing is, if you have a national health program, the national system will negotiate with the pharmaceutical companies, and it's what they do in Europe. And for instance, advertisement for pharmaceutical products is absolutely forbidden. It costs a lot of money to the pharmaceutical companies, and they send that to the customer to pay for that. You know, it's just not Just that would remove a lot of cost. I mean, and negotiation is the most important thing. And if everybody has to make money, you have a lot of pharmaceutical companies in Europe that want to make profit the same way, but you have a government and governance that says, we have the patients, we want to protect them, and we want you to work for us, and we negotiate the price.
We're talking about a single-payer healthcare system. Does it fit the United States of America? Why don't we have one? Could we have one? What do it mean for this country to have one? Why is it so far being left out of the mainstream of our debate about the future of healthcare? 410-319-8888 is the number here. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. Let's see. We'll go to Will in Hunt Valley.
Hello. How are you doing today?
Well, Will, welcome.
Good. I just have two quick comments. And the first is that, you know, being a disabled vet, I've seen what the U.S. government provides for healthcare, and I prefer private policies almost across the board. The other thing is my wife is a Canadian national, and she had never seen a GYN until she came to the States, and she has two kids from a previous marriage. The quality of care is not what people think it is. You have to talk to people from these areas before you assume the quality care is equivalent. She was stunned that you could call a specialist and go see one. The concept of that was amazing to her. So that's all I have to say.
Well, that's respond to that. Folks?
Sure. I mean, you know, there's not a system in the world that's perfect. And what we're talking about creating here is a system that's going to work for America. We're not talking about creating a Canadian system. That system has its own issues. But despite those issues, they spend a lot less than we do. And overall, their health outcomes are higher. We spend 2 to 3 times more per capita for our health care than the other countries spend. And we are ranked 37th in the world. We have a rising infant mortality. Our life expectancy is poor. So, you know, there are always anecdotal stories of you know, problems. But overall, the health, quality of health in other nations. And actually, another area is fairness in financing. If you look at how fair our financing is for healthcare here, we were ranked 54th in the world for that because we have a very regressive system that puts the load on those who earn less. But what he was saying about the VA, when you have a system that we alluded to this, that includes every single person in the country, it includes every legislator, every person, no matter what your income level is, there changes a whole different perspective of how you want to preserve and take care of that system. And you can believe that if everybody's getting the same standard of care, those who want a good quality of care are going to make sure that we're getting that.
And one of the things Will talked about, I mean, I have heard stories about Canada where people don't get to see the physicians they want and wait for certain procedures and how that argument fits into the question of single payer. I mean, and the other one is that when people think of single payer, they think of a government-run system. And when you look at, as he's talking about, the veteran system, veterans health care, it's a disaster in there. I mean, it's one of the worst health care systems that we have. It may cover all the people who go in, but it's a pretty lousy healthcare system.
Well, I think that, you know, one of the benefits of single payer that would be the American system is that patients would have access to the physicians they want to. And that is different than, you know, the example that the last caller just gave. I mean, in this country, it's partly culturally to understand the difference. I mean, if my house catches fire, I don't think twice that when I pick up the phone, the fire department's going to arrive at my house and put the fire out. If there's a police issue, you know, we like social services. We like having access to things. And healthcare, the main point driving single payer is that it's a right. It's not a privilege. You know, if we look at boutique medicine things or, you know, Will's wife coming here and seeing a specialist, that's a privileged ability for someone who can afford to access the system in this country. We have tremendous healthcare providers. The Baltimore Sun ran an article October 16th of this past year on Baltimore City Health Statistics, and they looked at life expectancy in Roland Park versus Holland's Market. And the assumption I'm going to make is, you know, the more affluent folks had access to care. Those in Holland's Market didn't have access to prevention and care. And the life expectancy is 83 in Roland Park and 63 in Holland's Market.
20 years.
So that's a remarkable difference, and it's a microcosm of...
So how does single payer address that?
Well, if you look at our country as a whole compared to other countries, that same discrepancy exists. We as a country are performing that much worse compared to every other country that has a national health care system. So single payer allows access, and that implies prevention and access to services. And countries that may have their own problems are still performing far better than we are with our current system. And it's because of this right versus privilege battle. And single payer provides that right to every American citizen.
We are talking about the single payer healthcare system, and does it fit the United States of America? A lot of argument that it should not be here. A lot of argument, a lot of discussions where it's left out of the argument. We're talking about that this hour to get a sense of what all that means for us. At 410-319-8888, and Jackie, you're on the air.
Hi, everyone.
Hi, Jackie.
I kind of agree with the idea of a single payer system, but the way that we currently deliver our healthcare services, kind of combobulated. I mean, I think there's some things that we could do right now that could streamline the process. We could have standardized referrals that everyone uses the same form. We could have standardized coverages where everyone gets the standard, the same types of coverages. There are things that we could do now to streamline the process and to better be able to deliver the services that we need. But I mean, our industry, we employ, healthcare employs a lot of people. So if you're talking about standardized one-payer system, what happens to the employees? I mean, I think there still has to be a way in which we can incorporate some type of...
Jackie, we only have like a minute left, but I want your question to be answered. So who'd like to grab that question? We have about literally a minute left. Margaret, go ahead.
Well... And what we have right now is we don't have any system. And with all the different insurance companies, I think trying to get them to get on board and streamlining, for me, that's not far from just go ahead and jumping into let's create a system that works. We're trying to create a system that works without actually creating a system that works by, you know, regulating the health insurance industry. And these types of reforms of patching the system, giving subsidies, mandating that people purchase insurance have been tried now for decades, and they have failed. But around the world, in other countries who have created health systems, they've worked, and they've worked much better than what we have here.
And let me say, Jackie, if you go up to our website, steinershow.org, you can hear the beginning of the show where we address the issue of what happens to the employees in the insurance industry now and how it changes things. And we'll have that all on our website. And I want to thank Drs. Tara Adachi, Margaret Flowers, and Brigitte Marti for joining us today, part of the Physicians for National Healthcare Reform. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mark, for having us on.
The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by Urbanite, Baltimore's free monthly magazine of ideas and innovation. This month, Urbanite hits the road with an issue of travel stories from regional day trips to journeys back in time. Urbanite is available for pickup at over 800 locations region-wide and online at www.urbaniteBaltimore.com. The Mark Steiner Show is produced by the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Justin Levy and Jessica Phillips. We're engineered by Zachary Coleman. Our interns are Christina Arison, Judith Lloyd, and Brian Boone. Theme music by Wal Matthews of Clean Cuts. To hear this show again and podcast any of our past shows and hear other interviews, visit us on the web at steinershow.org. And for Public Radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. I'm Mark Steiner, and take care.